This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, where to start? Where do we go with the four games of the Sweet 16 last night? Should we talk about the good? We'll talk about some good. The Gonzaga-UCLA game was absolutely fantastic if you had a chance to stay up. And for some of you on the East Coast, it was pretty late. 12:30 Eastern time when that thing wrapped up in Las Vegas. But it's two West Coast Titans in both UCLA and Gonzaga. They played in the Final Four, the epic Jalen Suggs game, if you remember that from 2021. And they played a fantastic game last night with the emotions of both teams coming together and really trying to figure out something as they were both going back and forth and back and forth, where you felt like one team had it and the other team just came right back out and then had it again. I will tell you, I do not have a dog in the fight anymore in this tournament. Well, I really don't, because South Carolina is my only school and they don't go to the tournament. And I can sit back and I can enjoy the ride, meaning I can just be a fan and enjoy the ride. I don't have a bracket that's in contention, so I'm not pulling for a team because of my bracket. I'm not pulling a team because I'm an alumni. I'm not pulling for a team because maybe one of my family members went to school there. And even I was getting nervous. Even I was getting like on the edge, kind of like, oh my God. Like the uncomfortableness of being in these moments, these close moments where every single thing is going to be, you either make this or you're done. That's it. You're walking home. That's it. You're finished and your season is over. And the thing about it was, I know how the seeding gets. You know, look, if you have a phenomenal season, you get the one seed, and the two seed is not a bad position to be in. And if you kind of had a couple of stumbling spots, maybe you get the three, right? And that's what happened to Gonzaga. They didn't dominate. They didn't go undefeated, right, this season. And yet I kept thinking to myself as I'm watching this going, this is a Sweet 16 game? Like, this is a Sweet 16 game? This is at least an Elite Eight game, if not a Final Four game. These two teams are outstanding. And UCLA, again, down a number of guys, including Jalen Clark, who they've had to play without him for a while, look like they had it. They had it. And then Julian Strother hits the shot from near half court on a night where he was missing shots and couldn't knock things down. Mark Few let him shoot it. They ran the Villanova Chris Jenkins play, right? And he knocked it down from deep. And then UCLA got a really good look at the end. When Tiger Campbell got the ball, just off that simple pass, you got a guy coming in, you hit him on the run, and he launches it. It's very similar to what Bryce Drew did years ago, if you remember, for Valparaiso. And it didn't fall. And Gonzaga is now going to the Elite Eight, where they've got an amazing, amazing UConn basketball team waiting for them. Because UConn just wiped up Arkansas and said, thanks for participating. Here's your parting gift. Head back to Fayetteville. Hope you have a nice time. What UConn did reminded everybody why people were high on UConn going into this tournament. There was a period of time where the Huskies during the regular season were really struggling. Dan Hurley had COVID. He was out as their head coach. They were struggling and losing games and couldn't find their rhythm, but they were a very, very talented basketball team. And when you get to this tournament, you hope that everything is aligned and the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and all the cliches that you want to use about being prepared and being at your best. And that was UConn last night. That game was close. Early, like 12-10, like that was about like 13-10, I think, was like where, and then off to the races go the UConn Huskies, and that was it. But if you got a chance to see it, and maybe the Michigan State game, which we'll get to in a second, Michigan State Kansas State game, was more attractive because it was. But if you had a chance to see some of what UConn did, because maybe it was a double digit lead, and you know they looked very comfortable at halftime, maybe you ignored it. But if you're watching to see what this team looks like and how it plays, goodness gracious, are they good. And this is going to be one of the best elite matchups I've seen in a long time. This is going to be epic. Gonzaga against UConn is going to be absolutely fantastic. So We've got other things to get to, though. There was some really good. Marquise Noel, sometimes you see stars on the rise in this tournament. Ja Morant became one a couple of years ago. You can go through the list of this tournament where guys that, you know, are good players, they rise up to the occasion. And Marquise Noel was that player for Kansas State. A kid that transferred in from Little Rock, a kid that was stayed at Kansas State when he could have left after their coaching change, and now he's got them to the Elite Eight, beating Michigan State in overtime and doing so with 19 assists, especially the one in overtime where he appears to be arguing with his coach, and while he's arguing with his coach, flicks an alley-oop pass. It was awesome. It was a show. And he's Mr. New York City. He's a Manhattan kid. And oh, by the way, did anybody put this dot connected last night? Because I did. You had two outstanding moments in this tournament. One, a performance, right, with Marquise Noel doing it in Madison Square Garden in New York City. His Twitter handle is Mr. New York City. He's from Manhattan. He's in New York putting on the show of his dreams to be at Madison Square Garden doing that for Kansas State. And Julian Strother from Gonzaga, who hits the shot that lifts the Bulldogs to a victory against UCLA, struggles all night from the floor and hits a three-pointer that wins it for Gonzaga. And oh, by the way, he's from Las Vegas where that game was held. So he had all these people and fans and friends and tickets, and he's dealing with being in his hometown, and he becomes the hero in Las Vegas in his hometown, like Noel became a hometown hero at Madison Square Garden. How does it work out like this?
Are you suggesting that whichever of the four teams has somebody from Kansas City tonight?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Look at the rosters.
Four teams have somebody from Louisville? Because Louisville's the other one, right?
Yep, Louisville is the other one. Yeah, like, look at the rosters. If anybody's from Kansas City or anybody's from Louisville, that's the guy that's going to do
something
awesome.
They're going to have the game-winning shot.
Yeah, they're going to do something amazing. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
I like it.
Yeah. I mean, Strother was 5 of 15 from the floor.
He was terrible.
5 for 15.
Terrible last night.
And Mark Few says to him at the end of the game, shoot it. Because they were...
I want to believe that Mark Few said shoot from the logo.
Yeah. So they got together after UCLA ups. They're in a timeout. Timmy missed a free throw. They're talking about the play. And they say, okay, here's what we're going to do. And Timmy's dejected. I mean, he's absolutely dejected. So they're going to run the play. And Strother says to Few, so if they're not playing deep, should I shoot it? Meaning, so if they're not coming out to that far defensively, meaning they're just kind of guarding the perimeter and he's a few steps off the perimeter, should he shoot it? Now remember, he's at that point, he's 4 for 14 from the floor. And Mark Few says, yes, shoot it. Yes.
In all honesty, too, why would UCLA guard there?
They can't guard there. Yeah, they don't want to guard there.
Yeah.
But if they're playing pressure defense, then you would have a man on man, and you could probably
but you put the game situation in a position where you could get a
basket on the other end. So it's a nutty finish. I mean, it was an awesome way for that game to end.
I think UCLA needed to end that way, coming back.
Yeah, I thought it was. Those two teams, again, I was disappointed that was a Sweet 16. I know it's a 2-3, and that's chalk, and that's the way it goes. But good Lord, were they fantastic.
I was telling you before the show, I said, you know, it was a game where you thought Gonzaga was dead in the water at half. Yeah. It was like, oh, I don't even know if I want to watch this. This is an annihilation of a game.
It's not 46-33.
Yeah, it wasn't entertaining.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, I'm watching FAU and why am I already blanking? I've already forgotten who they play. No, they're out of the tournament. It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, I bet so.
Right?
It's a day of mourning in Tennessee.
Right, no doubt.
I was watching FAU Tennessee, and I'm looking at this, and I just casually look up at the little ticker at the top, see that it's tied. And my wife even asked me, she's sitting there watching it with me. FAU started pulling in. She's like, how come you haven't turned over to UCLA Gonzaga yet? I said, because it's college basketball. I mean, I know there's like 4 seconds left in the game, but anything could happen.
Yeah.
They were up by 7 or 8 or 9 or something like that. But
yeah,
then it was just weird just to see that Gonzaga came back against UCLA and then, and then they pulled ahead by, 10, 11?
I'm going through the play-by-play. So Strother makes free throws at the 104 mark. At that point, Gonzaga is up 74-66.
Yeah.
With a minute left. That's an 8-point deficit. Now, when I was calling basketball games years ago, I was working with an old coach, and I remember asking him, as a coach, if you're trailing by 25, right, and you're chipping away at the lead, what do you want to get to late in the game? Like, what is your goal to get to when you're coming back from a game? And he said, if I'm within 10 points at the 2-minute mark, I'm okay. Like, if I can get it to within 10 points, if I'm trailing by 25, I just want to chip away 15 points at the 2-minute mark. And he goes, by the 1-minute mark, I need it to be in single digits. If I'm not in single digits by the 1-minute mark, I can't come back in that game. Yeah, strange things can happen, but percentage-wise, I'm not coming back from a double-digit 10, 11 points with a minute to go. That's 8, so that's on the cusp, right? And UCLA, within that 1 minute, had the lead of the game. That's how crazy that game was. Within 1 minute, they went from 8 down to leading that game before Strother's shot. Nuts. It's just an emotional ride, especially for Drew Timmy, who's our modern-day Christian Laettner, in terms of his presence in this NCAA tournament.
Yes, he is. I kept thinking that last night.
He is always, always, always in these spots.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing along, it's Wake Up Call on Sportsnet Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So, again, last night, the Gonzaga UCLA game was just absolutely fantastic.
Was epic.
Again, was epic. It was like the final minute of that game.
Instant classic.
Was great. Now I want to get to the bad, and that's Tennessee. There's a good to it in that Florida Atlantic is now 40 minutes away from going to the Final Four. Florida Atlantic at a Conference USA. Dusty May is their head coach. Now, Florida Atlantic, they're a 9 seed, so let's not get overboard with the Cinderella. This isn't Loyola Chicago as an 11 seed or anything like that. This is a 9. I know I'm splitting hairs here, but this was a team that won 31 games. They beat the Florida Gators. Conference USA is a good mid-major conference, and they dominated it. And they beat Tennessee in the second half of that game. They did not beat Tennessee in the first half of that game. They beat them in the second half of that game. Now, there are no easy games in the NCAA tournament. And I don't want to get all like hyperbolic here, but you know what? Tennessee should have won that game. They're bigger. They have better athleticism. Yes, they're down Zakai Ziegler, and Zakai Ziegler does a lot more than being just the point guard. He's one of the facilitators on defense to catch your running guards, and they don't really have that. But what they did against Duke was they really suffocated Duke defensively, and they were doing that against Florida Atlantic. And then Tennessee just started to fall apart. And they didn't get that boost that they got in Duke against Duke, where Olivier Kamwa was able to get 27 points against the Blue Devils and sort of emotionally pull this team that was playing a very, very tough game against a red-hot Duke Blue Devils team. Did they take Florida Atlantic lightly? No. I don't think that's how Rick Barnes works. But this was a very winnable game for Tennessee, especially after having the lead, establishing who they were, playing the kind of style that they wanted to play. And then Florida Atlantic had enough of that and went on a huge run to take control of the game. And here's what we always want to see with teams, especially teams that trail. When you get momentum, you take it, and then you put the foot on the gas, and then you throttle your opponent. And that's what Florida Atlantic did. Florida Atlantic went from trailing that game to dominating that game, and they did it quickly. I mean, when they found a groove, they took it to the Vols. And the body language on Tennessee changed completely. Barnes talked about it afterwards. He said, man, my guys looked a lot different out there because they got steamrolled, absolutely steamrolled, by a very good Florida Atlantic team. Tennessee was a four seed going in. They could have been higher. The Ziegler injury really hurt them because they did not look good. But the problem with Tennessee is this. They have a coach that cannot get to the Elite Eight. He just can't. He came there and he has been at Clemson. He has been at Texas. He coached Kevin Durant when he was in Austin. He got to Tennessee, took over for Bruce Pearl. He cannot get this very talented team that brings in McDonald All-Americans. Some of the top players in college basketball are playing in Knoxville, and he can't get them to the Elite Eight. He couldn't do them when they had a five seed. They couldn't do it when he had a two seed in 2019. He couldn't do it when he had a three seed in 2018. He couldn't do it when he had a three seed in 2022 last year. And he couldn't do it with a four seed by taking on a nine. And here's the other thing. It's not like they're losing to the top teams in the tournament. 2018, Rick Barnes and Tennessee lose to 11 seed Loyola Chicago. That was the sister gene year. That was the year that the Ramblers went to the Final Four, and they were everybody's darling. But they still were three seed going into that tournament, and they lost in round number two. 2019, they did lose to a three seed, and that was Purdue, but they were a two seed in the Sweet 16. In 2001, in the first round, they lost to Oregon State, and Oregon State was a 12 seed. They lost to an 11 seed Michigan in 2022, and now they lose to a 9 seed in Florida Atlantic. I like Rick Barnes as a coach, and I like Rick Barnes as a person, but he cannot get this team to where it needs to be. They have been to one Elite Eight in the history of the program, and that was in 2010. And he can't get that talented team that is constantly in the AP Top 25, constantly got a single digit next to their name when they get to the tournament, and they're losing to teams with either A, two digits next to their name, or a digit less than seven. It is a problem that continues and continues. Here's the funny thing about it. The Rick Barnes can't coach in the tournament jokes were being made before the tournament. And now he goes to New York City where there is a path to him to get to the Final Four. And he cannot beat Florida Atlantic. And this is not against Florida Atlantic whatsoever. That was a great team. This is a great team. They might give Kansas State all the fits in the world. You might see a 9 seed in the Final Four. You might see a team from Conference USA in the Final Four. Because here's the thing about Dusty May. He is a coach that loves the fire of the moment. Meaning, he looks at situations in games that are tight and knows he can push the right buttons and his kids respond. They were in so many close games this year in Conference USA that they were able to pull out at the end. In the end. And they did it against Tennessee in the second half, trailing by five at halftime. I go back to what I was saying earlier about this tournament. I don't think anybody in the more and more we get upsets, right? 15s over twos and now two 16s over ones within a 5-year period. And we might see more of these. College basketball is now entering this sort of era of transfer portal and teams are more confident. You can grab some really, you just need one or two really good kids to cause some chaos. And as I was saying last week, I think one of the benefits of having all of these upsets on the board is that you no longer have to sell the sort of Hoosier mentality to teams from these mid-major conferences in the NCAA tournament. You don't have to tell the kids they can do it, right? You don't have to tell the kids, you know, it's basketball like our gym at home. Look at this big arena. It's 10 feet up and 15 feet to the free throw line. And it's the same game, kids, because these kids are smart. They have watched all of these upsets their entire life. They've seen it all. The list is as long as a scroll of Santa's wish list, right? It's huge. You just scroll it out of all the teams that have upset everybody. These kids could probably rattle them all off, right? So coaches don't need to convince kids that they can go out and win games because it can just show them a huge list of teams that had done it before them. So I'm not here to say that Rick Barnes, it's not to say Rick Barnes should have easily won a game against Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic earned this by being outstanding all year. This wasn't a mediocre team that caught fire in their conference tournament and then got into the NCAAs and just made the best out of it. Florida Atlantic has won 31 games during their regular season. I mean, come on. I mean, it's a lot. I don't care what conference you play in. That's a lot of games. It's a lot of wins. But at the same time, if I'm a Tennessee Vol fan, I got a problem. I know this tournament is tough, and I got a coach that can recruit the hell out of the landscape. He really can. But I got to find a happy medium of what I want. Do I want McDonald All-Americans to keep coming to Knoxville? Of course I do. Do I want high-end talent to come to Knoxville? Of course I do. Do I want an AP top 25 listed next to my name, even in the preseason? Of course. Do I want to be one of the best basketball teams in a conference that is starting to showcase some of the best basketball in the country? Absolutely. But I need the payoff at the end. And if I don't get the payoff at the end, I don't know what to do with everything you just gave me. But if they go in another direction, they might not get what Rick Barnes brings them. Guys love playing for him. They love playing for him. And I'll give you a perfect example. So last night against Florida Atlantic, they're down late. And they need a quick three to try to get something in the final seconds of the game, right? So they have the ball. And they kick it out. And Santiago Vescovi misses a shot. Then Josiah Jordan James, I think, took a shot, missed. Right? Another guy missed. The ball, they missed three. But in every sense, they get the rebound. The ball is tipped. They go to the sideline. It's out on a Florida Atlantic player. Brian Anderson's calling the game, and he says, look, they're going to the monitor, but it's a waste of time. Because this game's over. Tennessee can't win. There's only a handful of seconds on the clock. Barnes gathers his team, and the reason he gathers his team is to console them. He's consoling them at that moment, and the guys realize they messed up. They messed up and lost, and he's there for them. They love playing for him, but he's got to get one of these teams to the Elite Eight. He's got to get one of these teams to a Final Four. Elite Eight first, and then let's talk about Cardware.
Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. So I hope tonight will be good, too, with college basketball. Alabama, I hope so. San Diego State.
How many times have we had that, though, where, you know, the first day was like, oh, my God, so amazing, and then the second time you're around, you're like,
Yeah. Kind of like,
But I think there's some good matchups tonight.
So you got Alabama, San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
You got Miami and Houston. You got Xavier and Texas, and Princeton and Creighton are the.
Yeah, I called that game early on.
I know, right?
I knew Princeton was going to face Creighton in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, exactly. can you believe that? What I'm excited about, I do this all the time in sports. I don't know if other people do this, but when I get to like the conference championship of the NFL, so I got four teams left, I go, one of these four teams is going to be Super Bowl champions, right? So I start thinking about each team and each fan base, and I go, you know, one of these teams is going to make it and win the Super Bowl. And I kind of do that with the NCAA tournament, but the Final Four is such a big prize that I start doing it around this time where I go, one of these teams is going to be in the Final Four. And I think about last night and I go, UConn and Gonzaga. Like that's a good representation of the West region is one of those two teams. Oh, don't get me wrong. Everybody's got, yeah. But that's fantastic. That's going to be a great game on Saturday. Great game. And I'm looking forward to Florida Atlantic and the pesky little Owls and their head coach, who makes over $500,000 to be the head coach at Florida Atlantic, and Rick Barnes makes over $5 million. So put that, put that in
parity.
The process that you want. By the way, if you're not drawing up a contract for Dusty May right now, if you're a school looking for a head coach, you probably should.
Do you think like a certain school, say, I don't know, Providence or Iona?
Somebody's making a phone call, right?
You think they were like, oh, we should have waited.
Man, some of these guys, look at Andy Enfield, right? What did Andy, who was Andy Enfield
still
before
don't know.
Florida Gulf Coast?
Still don't know.
Right? He was a coach that was married to an incredibly attractive woman that everybody went, look at Andy Enfield's wife. They weren't even looking at Andy Enfield. And then he took Florida Gulf Coast to the Elite Eight, I think, or the Sweet 16, definitely. But I think they got to the Elite Eight. I think they got to the Elite Eight. And next thing you know, he's the head coach at USC.
Yep.
That's where he's been ever since. You can parlay it if you do well in the tournament, man. You totally can parlay it.
I got to tell you, man, I'm watching that Florida Atlantic Tennessee game.
Right.
It was so chaotic for a long stretch.
Oh, it really was. You're right.
The speed that these two teams were showing, especially Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic looked like they were just about to run Tennessee off the floor.
Yeah.
And Forrest. Michael Forrest?
Michael Forrest, yeah.
Yeah, God, did he come in clutch.
I know. Florida Atlantic is, they're just really scrappy.
Yeah.
They're really, really scrappy.
And I agree with you. I mean, they're going up against UConn?
Yeah, Florida Atlantic? They are going up against Kansas State.
Kansas State.
Yep.
Not
a chance.
That's winnable.
Marquise Noel became a star last night. He became a big star. Like, on these stages, that's what happens. Right. You and I talked about it with John Morant a few years ago.
Yeah.
He was leading Murray State.
Who? Where?
Yeah, Murray State. He was doing great in the tournament. You know, it was like you have these moments, you have these players, and they shine at the right time. And it's not player of the year. Like, it's not like a Zach Eddy, right?
It's not those guys. Ones that you know.
Right.
It's always somebody that pops up out of nowhere from a school you're not too sure of. I mean, that's Davidson. When Davidson had that magical run with Steph Curry.
With Steph Curry.
Never
we found
heard
out
of
who Steph Curry was, right.
Never
exactly.
heard of him.
And that's
what barely remembered that his dad plays in the NBA.
I've said many times about the one and done kids, right? Where people, the one and done debate had been around, you know, once it started really kicking into college basketball, there was this thought like there was the G League. Remember the G League kind of came around in the early 2000s. The NBA was, it was called the D League. And then they changed it to the G League with the Gatorade sponsorship. But it was the NBA's development league. And so people were saying, I don't know why these kids are going to college basketball. If they're one and done, why don't they go to the G League? They can be a professional right away. And that's true. A couple of guys went right out of high school and became pros in like Australia for a year before they were draft eligible. But this tournament is attractive. I mean, this is a big, big stage. And even if you know that you're going to the NBA and you don't need to make a name for yourself and all of that, there's still an attractiveness to be a part of this, even if you know you're only going to be a part of it for 1 year. It's fun. It captivates the country. It's the thing in the month of March that everybody runs to and watches. And I would definitely want to do it. I would, if I was a 5-star going in early in the first round NBA and making my fame and fortune, and I'll hopefully have a 20-year career if I'm lucky, 15-year career probably, I'd still want at least one taste of this apple, right? I'd love it. I think even if I'm out early, I'd still want to know what it would be like to do it. But at the flip side, you can really make a name for yourself and really put yourself, like, you can have everybody in the country buzzing. Marquise Noel, again, was a kid that played at Little Rock and then transferred to Kansas State. When Bruce Weber left, they went with Jerome Tang, I believe his name is the head coach. He stayed. He said, all right, I'll stay. I'll be, you know, and, you know, a lot of players don't do that. The transfer portal, he's already experienced it once, right? I'll do it again. So he decided to stay, and now look at what's happening. He's got this team in the Elite Eight, and everyone's buzzing about him. Kevin Durant posted a tweet last night about his performance. It's a 19-assist game. He was great. And again, that alley-oop that he threw last in the overtime, I've never seen that before. Like, I've never seen anything like that before. That was Harlem Globetrotter-esque, what he did. That was great. He's arguing with Jerome Tang. It looks like they're arguing about something, and his eyes are on his coach. His coach is yelling at him. He's yelling back. And meanwhile, in the process, while he's distracting Michigan State because it looks like it's just two guys not on the same page, he flips an alley-oop pass. Dunk. Done. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I mean, it was it, and by the way, he pitched in 20 points, too, with 19 assists. That was one of the better performances you'll see in an NCAA tournament game from a guard. Complete distribution of the basketball. So, nevertheless, Kansas State is a three seed out of a very, very tough conference. But I don't think we really got a good feel for Kansas State this season. They were just one of the awesome teams out of the Big 12. The Big 12 was loaded with really good teams. Kansas and Texas were the tops, but the team was really loaded with talent. And Baylor was in the NCAA tournament. You can look around. TCU was in the NCAA tournament. Iowa State. I mean, they had a lot of good teams in the conference. And Kansas State was one of them. But I think a lot of times, Kansas State was kind of like, yeah, just a good team in that conference. And Michigan State, even though they were the seventh seed, they had Tom Izzo. And Izzo had been to the tournament 25 straight years, 17 Sweet 16s, and dialed up the right formula that you want if you want to win in the tournament, which is you need really, really good guard play, and you got to play good defense, really good defense. And he had both working for him, right? So he had both working for them. And Kansas, this game went back and forth as well, went into overtime. We had in a great overtime where Kansas State was able to get a lead, hold on to that lead and pull away. And Michigan State's run is over. And the Wildcats now will face Florida Atlantic and a darn pesky Florida Atlantic team, too. So good stuff. It was really, really fun night of basketball last night. And again, as I mentioned, even though the UConn game was a blowout, I think people could really see UConn for what they were. They throttled a good Arkansas team, They just annihilated them out of the gym, blew them out of the water.
It was, yeah.
I mean, just.
That's why I said it was, I mean, I understand where you were coming from earlier, where you were like saying UConn, that was a great game. It showed why people looked at them as a national title contender. Yeah. It was just boring.
It's not going to captivate people.
Yeah,
right?
Compared to the, I mean, I get, you know, hey, when you see a championship team doing their thing, it's fun to watch. It's fantastic. But there was so much drama in the other three games that, you know, when I was looking back on it, I was like, yeah, that's why, you know, the back and forth of those three games, that really exemplified madness.
Yeah, it's a 17-point lead for UConn at halftime.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like it's
and Arkansas
any different.
Not looking like they, you know, they even showed up to Vegas.
No, they were out. And they were out of this thing early and quick. But I just, for me, the strength of UConn is when everybody is clicking and Sanogo is clicking and all of that, and I think that Timmy Sanogo matchup is going to be fantastic on Saturday. Timmy, again, he carries Gonzaga in a way, right? We're just talking about him being a kind of a modern day Christian Laettner because he's been consistent at Gonzaga. Gonzaga's consistent late in this tournament, getting to, you know, a Final Four in 2021 and whatnot. But he carries them in a way, and Sanogo didn't necessarily have to do that last night because Hawkins had most of the offense. So they're still good.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's head to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. And for a job you'll love, visit progressive.com/careers. Zach Weinberger joins us from the Palm Beach Post to talk about the Florida Atlantic Owls at a Conference USA, and they beat Tennessee to go on to the Elite Eight in New York City, where they will take on Kansas State coming up on Saturday. How are you, Zach?
I'm good. It's obviously been a great morning for Owls fans here in New York City, but what a game yesterday.
What a game, and not only that, thanks for joining us so early. I know it's late and you're filing stuff, so I really appreciate the time this morning to join us.
Yeah.
They talked about this team this season early in the year, November, they beat Florida. Is that when people started to go, hey, maybe there's something to this Owls team this season?
There was definitely a buzz for sure. I mean, the Owls were sort of destined to have a win like that the season prior. I still remember the game against the University of Miami in the Borough, and they lost by a couple points. And, you know, it seemed like that they were destined to kind of have a run like this where they would upset a team like Florida and then just go on that same run. You know, I knew that the Owls would be better this season. I never thought they would make it, you know, to the Elite Eight, be ranked for the first time, and just have these just run of successful moments.
What is the key to this team? How is this team built? What is its strength? We saw all about that last night in the second half against Tennessee. But where does this start for the Owls?
You know, for me, I think it all starts with head coach Seth Beumain, what he's just instilled with this roster, especially when it comes to recruiting as well. You know, because when you look at this 7-8-man rotation, there's really not, you know, there's a starting lineup, there's a bench, but they don't have that mindset. And a lot of these guys play close to 30 minutes a game, and it all starts with a lot of these guys who are just sophomores. You know, this team is built to win now, and it's built to win in the future. You know, and they're basically their key points is just taking care of the basketball, shooting the three ball well, you know, out rebounding the other team, and it's just been working all season.
How would you describe the play in Conference USA? Yeah, the Owls are representing that conference, but, you know, North Texas is in the semifinals of the NIT, whatever you want to do with that. UAB had a good year. But the competition that they had in the conference this season, how would you grade it?
I would grade it pretty high. I mean, it's been tough this year, you know, and I know that FAU has swept a lot of teams in during the regular season, but Conference USA was a tough conference this year. You know, you mentioned UAB and North Texas, two of the headaches for FAU in the conference. But yeah, there's other guys like Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee, and even the middle level teams that were kind of giving them, you know, headaches. So it's surprising maybe to the rest of the world, but when you watch Conference USA basketball for the whole season, it's like, yeah, like these teams can go, you know, and especially like FAU and what they've done. So it's cool to see that, but, you know, it's obviously well worth it. A lot of these teams are now moving to the AAC, and for good reason.
Yeah, a little bit about that. The FAU, they said there was their last year in Conference USA. What is their future?
Yeah, so they're going to the AAC, and just, again, this university has been on the rise for so many years now, and, you know, there's been a lot of talk on Dusty May, just if he's going to be the head coach next year, and a lot of these players in the transfer portal. We don't know what's going to happen with that. But this team is on the rise. They're not staying in Conference USA. They're going to get so much exposure in the AAC. It's just, you know, the team is built to win.
So this was a team last night that was down. They go on an 18-2 run. And the keys to that last night, I mean, Tennessee just couldn't seem to put this team away. Looked like they were controlling the game early, but always kept it within that striking distance. And then the Owls came back with that run and then took it from there.
Yeah, if we saw anything this season, it's just that FAU doesn't really know how to lose. They're just pests. You know, it seemed like in that first half, you know, they were playing sloppy basketball. They had 9 first half turnovers, and they weren't shooting well from three at all. But it seemed like that physicality from Tennessee was really getting to them. But in the second half, something clicked. You know, Michael Forrest, who was scoreless in the tournament so far, he scored 8 straight points, led to a great run, like a 20-4 run, I believe. So it's just seeing it, especially against an SEC team in Tennessee. I mean, they had their problems, but still. Seeing kind of FAU stay poised like they have been all season, it's been really impressive to see.
They're 10-1 in games decided by 5 or less points. Yeah. What is the key to that statistic? It can't just be luck and being on the right side. There has to be some sort of philosophy that May is putting into these kids in these tight games.
To me, it's definitely the experience. If you've been watching the Owls the past couple of seasons, even since May got the job. You know, I think last season the stat was not in that favor at all. I believe they were like 0-8 or 0-10 maybe in close games like that. And they just know how to kind of handle themselves now. They just seem relaxed. They seem comfortable. And especially in last night where most of the crowd was pro-Tennessee. And they still found a way to kind of stay poised and get on a run and play to their strengths. So, to me, it's been the experience. You know, too many times I've tweeted or wrote in articles where it's just, you know, FAU falls in a close game or they have a lead and they lose it. So now the story's different.
Tell me about the school. Tell me about the location. Boca Raton, it's a beautiful place to live. I lived in West Palm Beach for like 6 months when I was younger. So, I mean, yeah, I had a little taste of it. My wife's from Florida, so we had a little taste of that. It's a beautiful place. But what is it like for the community? How does the community embrace this team? Where's Florida Atlantic? It's not right next door to Miami. It's a good little distance, but it's right there. The city still is in its shadow.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to FAU and obviously the schools that are in just Florida itself, right, it would rank maybe fourth or fifth. You know, you them and FIU is always kind of head-in-head of being kind of that school after UF and FSU and UM. But it's a great school. And, again, the exposure that they're getting because of the basketball team is going to beneficial, you know. And, again, what the basketball program has been doing, and we're seeing now a new regime with the football program and even other sports that are maybe not as widely recognized, they're always doing well. John McCormick and that baseball team and the volleyball team there and a lot of the women's sports. It's a program on the rise, you know, and I think that this basketball season has just been one of those few examples.
All right, where do you think the matchup is? It two New York kids going at it in the Elite Eight, but overall, how do you think they match up with Kansas State?
Again, I feel like FAU matches up with a lot of teams pretty well, and I definitely think compared to Tennessee, FAU is definitely that better matchup. Listen, they're undersized. You know, they've been one of the more undersized teams in the tournament. I think besides them, it was FDU who they faced. So I think they match up well. They're scrappy. They're tough. They're just a tough out. You know, Kansas State had an insane game against Michigan State the game before, and I was there. But to me, it's, you know, if FAU shoots three ball well, which they haven't been doing all tournament, but all season, that's been one of their strengths. If they kind of do those keys to victory, they're going to be a tough out, you know, especially guys like Elijah Martin, Janelle Davis, Michael Forrest, Vlad Goldin, et cetera, et cetera. If they just have great games, it's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I agree. And I think back to what we saw last night. I mean, sometimes in this tournament, we see teams that are playing, you know, a higher seed or whatnot, and they're down, and then they sort of go, all right, let's just get this out of here. They fought back, and they'll fight back against Kansas State. I'm looking forward to it on Saturday. Zach, thank you so much. Appreciate your time this morning, waking up and joining us and giving us a little bit more exposure onto these Owls and a fun run they've had so far. Appreciate it.
No problem, man. No problem.
I love it. Zach Weinberger, again, Palm Beach Post. On a Florida Atlantic. Yep, it's Boca, it's sunsets, it's beach, it's no snow, weather. Remember we talked to Steve Lutz, Texas A&M Corpus Christi? So what does it do for you, and what does it do for a school like that to get into the tournament? Well, we're a school on an island with over 300 days of sunshine a year. Yep, that's what you can get out of this tournament. You make an Elite Eight run, now you're really starting to pay attention. People are really starting to look. It's a beautiful place. Like I said, I was there for like, I don't know, 6 months. You know, young, crazy. But it's a love, a fantastic place. It's a retire. People retire there and whatnot. But now you've got a basketball team where they're going to the AAC next year, right? You've got players now getting big time exposure. Maybe they stay at Florida Atlantic. Maybe they go somewhere else because they're now being sought after in the transfer portal. You've got a coach that may not be around because, again, if you're making $500,000 a year in a land where 4 to 5 to 6 to 2 to 3 million can become a name coach. We saw it with Andy Enfield at Florida Gulf Coast, saw it with Porter Mosier at Illinois Chicago, is now the head coach at Oklahoma. Dusty May could be that guy. Takes a team to the Elite Eight, maybe takes a team to the Final Four, and all of a sudden becomes the hot coach that you'd want to have on your campus, and you come with some big dollars. But nevertheless, that's then. Now is Florida Atlantic will take on Kansas State in New York City Saturday. One of those teams will be playing in Houston for the Final Four. We'll continue Hour 2 underway as we get ready to go on Sports Map Radio this morning.